This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 5th of April 2024. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 5th of April. Your readers in the studio today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. The main headlines from the Chronicle this week: historic wall repairs finished at last, money is there for hospital site, and review as baby death rate rises. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which was historic wall repairs finished at last. Winchester residents celebrate a 15-year battle is finally over. And it's a picture of all the residents looking very happy. Winchester residents have been celebrating the completion of the rebuilding of their historic boundary wall. For the last 4 months, North Walls has seen congestion caused by the scaffolding needed for the specialist flint work. The work is the culmination of a 15-year battle with local authorities and heritage agencies by the Marston Gate Management Company and Belgarum Property Management Limited to get the necessary approvals. Work was originally scheduled for the summer of 2023, but was delayed until further notice due to additional tests being needed following discussions between the contractors and Historic England. North Walls marks the northern line of the city's defences, originally built in Roman times and upgraded in the Middle Ages. A spokesperson for MGMC said the work has been carried out without any public support, with costs of more than £250,000 borne entirely by the residents. For many of us, it was a great shock to discover that the development by Banner Homes in 1999 had only been authorised on the condition that the wall was maintained at the expense of the residents. As well as photographic surveys, the exercise has involved chemical analysis of the mortar to get the right mix for repairs. Flint walls are typical of Winchester and help to make the city a pleasant place. We have always taken responsible position in its repair and are pleased that it's now in good order.
Money is there for hospital site. A health minister has revealed the site for the new Basingstoke Hospital in Dummer will be bought this year if the public consultation results show that the M3 Junction 7 is the preferred option. Lord Nick Markham, Parliamentary Under Secretary of State for the Department of Health and Social Care, said the government is in serious negotiations with the landowner and an initial fund of £10 million has been allocated to develop plans for the new hospital. He was speaking at a community chat organised by MP Maria Miller at the Carnival Hall in Basingstoke to discuss the New Hampshire programme, NHP. Natalie Forrest, who is in charge of the NHP, also spoke to members of the public at the event. To question on whether there are really is money allocated for the Basingstoke Hospital plans, Lord Markham said that the government would not be spending tens of millions of pounds on developing plans and acquiring sites if the money was not allocated. If the consultation shows that Junction 7 is the preferred option, we are hoping to secure the land by this summer. NHS Hampshire Together has been conducting consultations on plans for the new hospital. The options include building a new hospital at Junction 7 or at the current Basingstoke Hospital site. Junction 7 is the preferred option of the Hampshire Together. To questions on why the government has not put money in the annual budget yet, Lord Markham said that it's because it's a multi-year programme. We're not stupid, he said. We don't spend tens of millions of pounds on plots of land if we don't know where the money is there. I can assure you that for any big project, that's not the way the government finances work. Governments make commitments over multiple years, and you only set your budget on an annual basis. We have an allocation to buy the land this year, and that money is in the bank account. The Treasury would not be signing off fund to buy this land if it didn't have the money for the project. The Minister added that the programme will need cross-party support to materialise it. Whatever happens with the next election over the next 10 to 15 years, what is vital is its absolute cross-party, and we're in this together. Lord Markham, there's a picture of him with Lord Markham with Maria Miller sitting at a table at this discussion.
Review as baby death rate rises. An internal review is being carried out by the Hampshire hospitals after the rates of babies born with brain damage due to oxygen deprivation at birth increased last year. An article in The Guardian reported that the, quote, disturbing data was presented at a Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust meeting, and staff were told the situation was under review. HHFT said that the data reported on the rise in the rates of babies born with hypoxic ischemic encephalopathy, or HIE, a type of brain damage caused by a lack of oxygen to the brain before or shortly after birth, had been misrepresented in The Guardian. It confirmed that the number of babies born in 2023 with HIE was 5 times greater than the number born in 2022. The figures provided by HHFT show that in 2023, there was a rise in babies born with HIE to 2.5 per 1,000 live births. This was up from 0.5 per 1,000 live births in 2022. However, the Trust said that the normal range, as set by the British Association of Perinatal Medicine, is between 1 and 3.5 per 1,000 live births, which it said demonstrates that Hampshire Hospitals is within the expected range. A spokesperson for the Trust added, "While the rise in 2023 is well within expected variation, every baby counts, and so we are undertaking an internal review to ensure we have fully informed understanding of potential causes for this. This is a safe and routine response. Babies born with possible or definite hypoxia around birth are continuously monitored by the Trust in conjunction with the neonatal network, and the numbers are shared widely. Hampshire Hospitals has not seen a significant statistical rise. Not only have we always monitored, the process is continually modified with ongoing staff training and specialist clinical support. Fetal monitoring has been integral to the provision of safe maternity services at Hampshire Hospitals for many years. It is an area of considerable focus with ongoing investment in training, technology and equipment." And according to the British Association of Perinatal Medicine, HIE can result in severe disability or death.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements and Christian comment, letters, Chronicle comment, first person and Bell Garum. So the death announcements this week. Andrews, James Edward Andrews, on the 8th of March at Southampton General Hospital, aged 93. Barrett, Alexander Barrett, died peacefully at Winchester Hospice, aged 57. Bruce of Salock, Vernon, nay William Powlett, who died after a short illness on the 22nd of March, aged 96. Excuse me. Bertram, Colin Franklin Bertram, died suddenly on the 31st of January, aged 82. Cousins, Jean Cousins, nay Sherwood, who died peacefully at home in Twyford, aged 86. Darlington. Norma Darlington died peacefully at home, at Home Park Nursing Home at Eastleigh, aged 85. Gibbons. Jeremy Stewart Gibbons, KC, who died peacefully in Winchester on the 16th of March, aged 74. Holloway. Richard Holloway died at Fordingbridge Care Home on the 12th of March. Hudson. Caroline Ann Hudson died on the 14th of March at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 65. And Caroline Hudson was the former leader of the 2nd Hairstock Brownies. Now we move on to Christian Comment, which is read by Andrew, please.
And this week's Christian Comment is entitled Seeing the Best in One Another, and it's written by Reverend Richard Sercombe. Apart from leading a church service at a care home once a month, I have recently had the opportunity to volunteer in a different care home, helping residents with activities. It is a privilege to support the work in these places and a joy to interact with these special people. Each has their own life story, and despite their physical or mental limitations, they are still valued. As people talk and engage with them, they regain a new lease of life through love, care, social interaction, and physical and mental stimulation. We all need to see the best in one another, and our care for the most vulnerable in our communities shows how much we love one another. From the youngest, before and after birth, to the oldest, everyone has value and worth. Our disabilities, limitations, and weaknesses do not define who we are. We are all special and valuable to God, as well as to one another. David, the shepherd boy who would become king, had many people throughout his life who either didn't like or misunderstood him. In Psalm 139, he wrote of how God made him in his image and likeness, and knew him even before he was born. David experienced God's continued love, care, and guidance throughout his life, and God's promise to be always with him. David encourages us that God sees us in exactly the same way. He has created each of us as a unique masterpiece. Unique because there is no one else like you. A masterpiece because God makes and continues to make everything perfect, and that includes every one of us. Life is so much sweeter when we see that everyone has worth and value, if we all love and care for one another. And that was written by Reverend Richard Sercombe of the Elim Church, Romsey, Elim Pentecostal Church.
Thank you, Andrew. Now we move on to letters to the editor. Nikki, you've got first, please.
And this is from Kevin De Cruz, headed Safety First. I was shocked to read that Hampshire County Council is planning to cut 26 school crossing patrols to help balance their books. This is stupidity at its highest level. The safety of children must override all cuts. There is a lot of waste in the council, and they could reduce the salaries of some of high-paid senior staff and sell off some buildings, as so many staff now work from home. This would provide over the £1.1 million needed to preserve the school crossings. I see so many cars driving 50 miles an hour through 20-mile-an-hour zones, and there was a huge crash near me in Hoe Road a few months ago when a big SUV car overturned in a 20-mile-per-hour zone. You can't put a price on a child's life. And that from Kevin De Cruz, Pine Road, Bishop's Waltham.
Water failure. Over the past few years, sewage has been allowed to pollute our cherished chalk-based rivers, including the Itchen and Test. Raw sewage has been seen running down Winchester High Street more than once. The privately owned water companies have reneged on their basic responsibility to ensure of sewage-free rivers and ultimately seas, clean water delivered to customers. The issue? Profit. Further, shareholders accumulating vast amounts. The government is responsible for not being sufficiently strong towards the water company's executives. There is no way customers should have to pay even more to companies that have failed, putting profit before customer service and investment in the infrastructure. And that's from Simon Lever of Juniper Close, Badgers Farm, Winchester.
And this letter is from Tony Atherton, and he asks a question, are we on the right road? Thank you for your article, Date Set for Road's Controversial Move, which informed us that Andover Road will close early in 2026, and traffic will then be diverted through the new Barton Farm estate. As you say, the move is controversial, and personally, I have yet to meet anyone who sees it as a good idea. However, I am willing to accept that at some stage in the past, the powers that be, including the professional planners, genuinely believe this to be a good idea. They ought to know what they're talking about. Can I therefore put this question to them via your newspaper? Please, will someone in authority, from either the county or city councils or both, and paid by us to represent us, explain to us why it is such a great idea to divert a dead straight main arterial road through a new housing estate, especially when it appears that a large majority of the people you represent think it's a very bad idea. Years ago, I used to drive to Devon along the A31, A35, where village after village were each pleading for a bypass, and they got one. Here, we are removing one. As this decision will affect a huge number of people adversely, will you please explain the logic behind it? Maybe you will convince us, though it's hard to see how, but surely you owe us an explanation. And that's from Tony Atherton, Rulands Drive, Hairstock, Winchester.
And there's another letter on the same theme from Dave Alderson, South Wanston. So we now have a date forecast for the closure of Andover Road of early 2026 in favour of all the main road traffic entering Winchester from the north, passing through the King's Barton housing estate. Having listened to the recorded stream of the King Barton Forum, it seems that all our local councillors are either in favour of it or seem to accept it as a done deal. Whereas the Residents' Association of King's Barton itself holds the opposite view. The politicians certainly didn't query it when given the opportunity in the forum. I have recently been canvassed on the doorstep by someone promoting their party for the May elections, and I challenged them on the finality of this proposed closure. At first they said there was nothing councillors could do about it, but then went on to support the closure wholeheartedly, suggesting ludicrously that having two roads instead of one will create more traffic. There will be some more traffic, obviously, being that of the King's Barton residents themselves, but councillors need to adjust their misguided understanding of what is a main road and what is a road through a residential estate which, like others, feeds onto that main road. Common sense should provide the enlightenment. The King's Barton Forum conversation indicated that only a new planning application could change the proposed Andover Road closure, and Mike Slynn of the Residents Association made a strong point that such an application might be favoured by recognising inevitable new developments at Sir John Moore Barracks, with the additional traffic that will bring through the estate. I asked the question, who is able to submit such a planning application? It would be interesting to hear. The other question is, how did we get into the situation where the profit-making developer in Carla Homes has the whip hand over our local transport policy? I shall be seeking to understand the different party views on this matter before casting my vote in May. And that's from Dave Alderson, Cherry Close, South Wanston.
And this from Roger Davey, headed Stand Down. Andrew Beadle, in his letter, Hampshire Chronicle, March 21, has been very measured and objective when referring to the selection of Flick Drummond as the Conservative candidate in the coming general election, And yes, many of us living in Winchester at the time, and myself in Flick Drummond's council ward, have long memories and neither forget nor forgive the unmitigated arrogance in moving to the USA when a councillor and declaring that she could serve her constituents perfectly well from there. She has not, as far as I know, ever apologised. So there you have it. This candidate, if elected at the election, presumably thinks she could do the same again. It is a case of being careful what you wish for or vote for. And it is clearly a flawed process where Flick Drummond was the only applicant for the seat simply as the sitting member for part of the new constituency. Winchester deserves a candidate from open competition for the seat, not a shoo-in like this. And while I know Flick Drummond and wish her well in the future, with all due respect, her political career is less than memorable, and Winchester needs a politician who will put Winchester on the map and strive ceaselessly for all of us. Winchester can do better. Stand down, Flick Drummond, stand down. And that from Roger Davey, Field Close, Bishop's Waltham.
Any takers for this Austin work? There is still time to address the widespread unease felt at the Disneyland sculpture of Jane Austen that the cathedral proposes to install in the inner close. At the public consultation and in your letters column, March the 14th and previously, objections have been raised to the inappropriate dress and the strange demeanour of the writer envisaged so far, as well as to its proposed location. Can I suggest a much better option would be to develop the project developed by the Hampshire sculptor Robert Truscott, pictured here, a bronze marquette showing Jane Austen at her desk, clothed appropriately for her day, and exercising the skill for which she is known worldwide, observing the social world of her time and milieu with wit, incision and narrative brilliance unequalled in her day. Truss marquette can be finished at almost any scale and size, placed indoors or outside, and at a fraction of the immense cost put aside for the Disney version that so many people revile. Any takers? And that is accompanied by a picture of Jane Austen sitting on a ladderback chair at a pedestal table writing. And it's actually very charming. And that was submitted by Brandon Taylor, West End Terrace, Winchester.
I think our letter writers are quite... they're getting quite excited this week.
Feisty.
Feisty is the word. That's an excellent word. Hospital future. Yes! It would be marvellous to have a brand new hospital on the John Moore Barrack site, yes. And it's quite true, as your correspondent Mr. Briggs has pointed out, that the site has excellent vehicle links. So, good for you, Danny Chambers, for coming up with such a brilliant solution. Except it's just not going to happen. As Steve Brine explained in this paper, the NHS Trust, formed in 2012, comprises Winchester and Basingstoke and Andover. Both the main hospitals in Basingstoke and Winchester need urgent updating. Consultants at both hospitals have expressed a desire to have a centre of excellence containing all the very best innovative medical equipment, and the government has pledged to fund this. So the obvious place for this new hospital would be between the two major conurbations. People in Basingstoke would be up in arms, deluging the Basingstoke Gazette with letters of complaint if the new hospital were sited in Winchester. The Lib Dem parliamentary candidate would be organising petitions, making it headline news in his leaflets. But of course, he's not. He just diplomatically wants better services close to home. As to Mr. Selby's contention that the JMB site was never considered, it was. It was thought to be too small. Anyway, and here the sheer hypocrisy and doublethink of the Lib Dem party is revealed. The Barracks site has been identified in the Winchester City Council's draft plan as a large-scale housing site. WCC is, at present, led by the Lib Dems. Double think alert. So is the blow-in from North Cornwall, Danny Chambers. Monumentally ignorant or stupid? Or is he and his party here in Winchester just playing party politics? You decide. But we've been here before. In 2017, Jackie Porter, campaigning to be MP, had the same brilliant idea of siting a new hospital in the barracks. Another red herring, or should we say yellow herring? And this is from a rather energised Annie Saunders of E Street, Alsford.
And the last letter is also about the NHS, but it's not about the hospital specifically. I'm not sure any of us can make a valid judgment about our hospital A&E. However, I am now sure what is wrong with the NHS. It is certainly not the wonderful healthcare professionals. My recent experience is first class. Sadly, it has more to do with communication and administration. At a recent appointment at a Southampton hospital, I was four times sent to the wrong place. A follow-up appointment was cancelled, but no attempt made to inquire when I was available. The result? A two-month delay. Even the private sector has issues. Communication with my GP is very one-way. No reply texts and no emails. Even my optician managed to confuse things. I remain grateful for the doctors and nurses I have seen and their dedicated service. And that's from Tony Gaster, Old Kennels Lane, Oliver's Battery, Winchester. Now we have Chronicle editorial comment, please, Nikki.
Headed, happy ending to 25-year nightmare. It's a nightmare that could affect countless homeowners. The small print in the legal documents of a property purchase. 25 years ago, a new development was built at the former Marston's Brewery site in Winchester city centre. Many residents would have been unaware that they were liable for the maintenance of the historic boundary wall that runs along North Walls. Years down the line, the residents have had to cough up around £250,000 for the wall to be rebuilt. The work has lasted 4 months and seen major disruption for traffic flows in North Walls as the builders needed to use part of the carriageway for scaffolding. It followed a 15-year legal tussle with local authorities and heritage agencies. Because of the historic nature of the wall, research work had to be done to make sure the right type of mortar would be used. This story shows the importance of being fully aware of liabilities when making a property purchase. But the Chronicle also salutes the residents featured in the front page for shouldering that burden and restoring an important piece of city history. Most of the wall dates from the 19th century, but it runs along the line of the defensive ramparts that protected the city from Roman times through the Middle Ages. On the bright side, the residents say the future maintenance costs will be minimal. An afterthought, what a shame most of the city's stone defences were demolished by the end of the 18th century. Could have been quite a tourist attraction today.
Thank you. Now we have first person, please, Norma.
And George Hayter writes about works of art. Driving back from skiing in the French Alps, my wife and I stopped in Paris and went to the world's biggest museum, the Louvre, at the heart of the French capital. It's not far off a million square feet, displaying 38,000 objects, and last year visited by 9 million people. That sounds busy, but when my wife and I were there, we were surprised to find ourselves almost alone. First, we visited the museum's indoor sculpture courts, where there were only a dozen or so other people at any one time. When we reached the Dutch galleries, we were delighted to find ourselves completely alone in a room of Rembrandt's, including his powerful still life, The Slaughtered Ox. While admiring, in solitary silence, Rembrandt's toothpaste-thick brushwork depicting the unfortunate ox, we noticed that not just the gallery we were in, but the adjoining two galleries were also deserted. Obviously, the Louvre's collection of great art is so vast that the huge number of visitors spread thinly. we wondered if most visitors might be concentrated around the world's most famous painting, the Mona Lisa, by Italy's Leonardo da Vinci. After Flemish painting and Assyrian sculpture, etc., we decided to take a peek at the Mona Lisa room before leaving the Louvre. The crowd grew denser and the roar louder as we neared the jam-packed room. Inside, an impenetrable shouting crowd stood between us and the 30-inch portrait. We couldn't get closer than about 50 feet, and we couldn't see through the raised hands and clutching phones. The Mona Lisa doesn't deserve to be the world's must-see painting. It's a non-event. Skillfully painted, yes, but a dull portrait of a dull sitter. The reason it's famous is that in 1911 it was stolen. An Italian nationalist hid in a cupboard until closing time and then walked out with it and disappeared, creating a whodunit news story that ran for years. There was more publicity when the 500-year-old oil was eventually recovered and rejoicing Parisians started a craze to see it. Later, an opera, two films, a chart-topping ballad, and the best-selling novel spread the picture's fame worldwide. I admit tourists fighting to get near the Mona Lisa are worth seeing. They're more interesting than the painting itself. Back in Winchester last week, I noticed that the Louvre is not the only place exhibiting great art. Top British artist Grayson Perry has a fun exhibition at the Arc, the former library in Jury Street. Two big tapestries by the flamboyant transvestite Turner Prize winner will be on show there for the next 2 months. The modest room exhibiting Grayson Perry's tapestries is not like the vast Louvre. For one thing, it's quicker to get into. I just turned up and I did not have to talk my way out of giving my address and email. Alternatively, you can reserve tickets online. At the Louvre, we just turned up, but then we had to queue in melancholy rain in Paris for nearly an hour. When I went last week, Hampshire people seemed to be captivated by Grayson Perry's exhibition. There is a big deal for Winchester. Perry is almost as big in the UK contemporary art as the Mona Lisa is in Italian Renaissance art. Both of Perry's brightly coloured tapestries are complex cartoons about 9 feet square depicting the life of his invented, fairly ordinary, modern woman, Julie Cope. Each wool and cotton tapestry is crammed with objects and events in the life of the twice married Julie, with detailed explained by text on the wall and a couple of screens. A recording of Perry's voice drones on about Julie's, but is rather drowned out by the forced air ventilation. However, you can easily follow the narrative on a written wall panels. Poignant, witty, the room is respectful, no trace of Louvre crowd hysteria here. A Louvre adult ticket is £22. The Arc adult ticket is just £4.50.
Thank you. Now we have a couple of items from Belgarum, Andrew.
And this week, Belgarum has obviously been to the University of Winchester. And there are two articles. Universities Laboratory Bar. The University of Winchester has opened a bar, but drinkers must complete a test before they're allowed any alcohol. Winchester is one of the few UK universities to have a bar lab where experiments on the effects of alcohol on human behaviour can be monitored. Until recently, it was more like a lab than a bar, but a makeover has seen it transformed into a cosy venue renamed Wendy's, in honour of the psychology department's first alcohol researcher, Dr. Wendy Neller. Wendy's has twinkling lights, bar optics, piped-in background chatter, and club music. The chief bartender is Dr. Debbie Crossland, who leads the university's Psychology with Criminology program and co-convenes the Centre for Forensic and Investigative Psychology. The old bar lab ran for about 15 years before COVID-19 called time on the breathalyzer and the experiments. But Wendy's more realistic feel means that the bar is back open and the research is flowing. Dr. Crossland studies the effect of alcohol on eyewitness memory. By providing a consenting bar customer with alcohol up to the drink drive limit, and then showing the drinker a video of a crime. The mock witness is then tested on their recall of the events they have just seen. All sounds rather fun to me, but never mind. And this is accompanied by a picture of the bar, and with Dr. Jackie Hillman and Dr. Debbie Crossland there, and between them is a very smiling student, Sophie Crawley. The other visit to the university is entitled Inspiring Female Entrepreneurs. A Hampshire CEO helped to inspire a new generation of female entrepreneurs at an International Women's Day event. Sam Gaskill, CEO and founder of data management consultancy DataFit Limited, delivered a presentation to the University of Winchester students looking to start a business. The #EmpowerHer event was specifically aimed at women and featured a panel of female business leaders sharing their entrepreneurial journeys. Ms. Gaskill said, "International Women's Day has always been close to my heart, and when I was given the opportunity to go and talk to the next generation of female founders, I absolutely jumped at the chance. As a woman in data, I have always been the minority in what's a male-dominated sector, and throughout my 10-plus year career, I have worked incredibly hard." Josh Wood, enterprise officer at the university, said, "We found her story both awakening and inspiring." And this is also accompanied by a photograph and shows Sam, I guess Samantha Gaskill, standing in front of the at the back of the lecture theatre, ready to give her presentation.
Thank you. Now, lighting up time ends Friday the 5th of April at 6:31 a.m. and begins at 7:45 p.m. And next Wednesday the 10th of April it ends at 6:20 a.m. and begins at 7:53 p.m. And if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. And that number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And now we continue with further items of general news. Nikki.
And this one headed Guitarists a Solo Date. A classical guitarist will be hosting a solo concert this April in Hampshire. Zoe Barnett will be visiting The Yard in Chilton Candover on Friday, April the 12th, with the event promising an evening of her favourite pieces under candlelight in The Yard's The Barn event space. Zoe is currently completing her master's degree at the Royal College of Music. Zoe's distinctive contribution to the classical guitar world is her innovative technique of performing standing up, a method that has been described as a total engagement and communication of the performer's mind, body and soul. Zoe has garnered a substantial following on social media, with 89,000 followers on Instagram alone. She's on a mission to redefine the perception of classical music, particularly among the younger generation of female musicians, by infusing her performances with elements of fashion and individuality. Her goal is to break down the barriers and showcase that classical music is inclusive, accessible to all ages and genders. Zoe will be performing at The Yard, a rural cafe and event space in the Candover Valley. In the rural setting of a working farm, The Yard seeks to inspire and innovate, aiming to bring people together with programmes and events that are creative, vibrant and community building.
Council goes digital. Winchester City Council is set to digitally overhaul local services after signing the Local Digital Declaration. This marks a commitment to make service delivery more efficient and easier for residents to access digitally. Councillor Cutler, Deputy Leader and Cabinet Member for the Finance and Performance, said, We recognise that digital isn't always right for everyone, but more and more of us find it a convenient and easy way to get things done. We want to ensure that online services help are not a barrier for people when reaching their council. We also want to ensure that we are working in the most efficient way possible. By improving online services, it will mean people can do their council business at a time which suits them, and freeing up other ways to contact us for those who do not have the access to online services. We already hold this commitment, but signing of this declaration underpins this. The declaration is a nationwide commitment to public bodies to modernise public services for the internet age, aiming to deliver more customer-focused local services that are cost-effective. As part of this digital transformation, the Council is launching a programme known as TC25, designed to improve online services for residents. In addition, the Council will initiate the project aimed at enhancing efficiency in Council operations. The Council has also announced a series of free monthly digital drop-in sessions to assist residents in navigating the new digital service. Digital champions will be on hand to provide one-to-one expert support.
Program to plant elms. Hampshire communities are being encouraged to apply for funding to plant disease-resistant elm trees and help revitalise a once endemic species. This nature recovery effort results from a tree council grant secured by Hampshire County Council's Forest Partnership and has already supported the planting of 1,205 elms. Councillor Russell Oppenheimer, the Council's Cabinet Member for the Countryside, said, "The English countryside was once dominated by elms, but since the 1960s, these majestic trees have been ravaged by Dutch elm disease, accidentally introduced to Europe in the early 20th century. The disease has killed nearly all the mature elms in Britain, an estimated total of 60 to 100 million trees. With support from the Tree Council, we are taking positive steps to bring this iconic species back to Hampshire's landscape as part of our plans to plant 1 million trees by 2050. We are inviting green-fingered communities to get behind the drive to reinstate elm trees. It's a great opportunity to enhance local spaces and provide essential habitats for wildlife, including tussock moths and white letterhair streak butterflies. Inquiries for the 2024-25 planting season, starting from the autumn, are open now. Town and parish councils, local groups and landowners can find more information on the Hampshire Forest Partnership webpage.
£60,000 grant by Masons for More Care. More than 100 disabled children and young people with complex needs will be able to access care in emergency situations thanks to a new £60,000 grant. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Freemasons donated the money to Southampton's Rose Road charity. It will fund the charity's emergency respite care service across Hampshire, which will help families in need of unexpected or additional support that is not included in their standard care funding. This can include after-school sessions with Rose Road's outreach teams or stays in its 14-bed respite centre, which costs more than £450 a night. The grant will also fund essential redevelopment of the outdoor space in its respite centre, creating a therapeutic and accessible environment for recreation and relaxation. This will contribute significantly to the physical and mental well-being of the disabled young people who regard Rose Road as their home from home. Freemasons from across England and Wales donate to the Masonic Charitable Foundation, which the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Freemasons used to fund the grant. Chloe Atkins, head of fundraising at Rose Road, said, "We are very grateful to Hampshire Freemasons for their generous grant. Families with a disabled child often need support that extends beyond the funded hours they receive from the statutory organisations, such as during a family bereavement, illness, or because of work or other family commitments. Having this funding means we can be there for families when they most need us. John Pearson, the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Freemasons charity lead, said, "I'm really pleased that we've been able to help Rose Road to provide the urgent help that families with a disabled child so often need."
Cathedral passes rise. Winchester Cathedral is increasing the price of its annual passes from the start of April. Under 16s with family will remain free. The annual pass gives access for 12 months from the date of purchase. Entry for worship and prayer is always free of charge. Winchester Cathedral Commercial Director John Blake said, "A one-off purchase of an annual pass offers tremendous value for money, enabling visitors, especially local residents, multiple opportunities to return at no additional cost during normal visiting hours. All year round, there are free daily guided tours led by the cathedral guides and changing art exhibitions." The Very Reverend Catherine Ogle, Dean of Winchester Cathedral, said, "As always, entry to the cathedral for those attending worship and wishing to spend time for quiet contemplation and prayer remains free. The money our visitors give so generously to enter the cathedral is our main source of income. It is used to keep the cathedral open for worshippers and visitors, now and in the years to come. Winchester Cathedral is an independent charity that receives no regular government funding for its upkeep. The new prices come into effect on April the 1st, and they are adults £13.50, over 66 £12, and students £7, and groups £11 per person."
A series of lunchtime concerts has been advertised. The Hospital of St. Cross is launching its Perfect Pitch lunchtime concert series after its success last year. The Brothers of St. Cross organise and host the series, which takes place in the chapel. The cream of Hampshire's young music talent will be performing, with Winchester schools well represented. And the newly appointed leader of the National Youth Orchestra, Rose Gosney, will perform in early May. Outstanding students from the Royal Academy of Music and the Royal College of Music will also feature. The principal aim of the concerts is to provide young music students with encouragement and a performing opportunity in the surroundings of the Chapel of St. Cross. And a new website has now been launched containing a full listing. The new series starts on April the 18th and will continue every Thursday until October the 31st. Organisers say it will offer variety and the music performed will be accessible and cater for all tastes. Concerts will include instrumentalists, singers, dancers and actors. They will be free to attend, with a retiring collection to be donated to the hospital. They will fund projects for the chapel, including improved wheelchair access, upgrading the LED lighting and a new draft-proof curtains to the west door. The concert on April the 18th will be given by Katya Grabova, who's a pianist from the Royal Academy of Music, and she will play works by Debussy, Schubert and Stravinsky. Refreshments will be available before and after in the 100 Men's Hall. And for more details, visit perfectpitchconcerts.co.uk.
A good book gives you time. P&G Wells is an independent bookshop near Winchester Cathedral, which is approaching its 300th anniversary. The earliest P&G Wells record is found from 1729. Steve Scholey, the manager, said, "The opportunity to share the importance of being interested, especially for youngsters, is my favourite thing about working in a bookshop. We enjoy helping to find exactly the right book for a customer and are pleased to support our customers' mental well-being, something we were made particularly aware of during lockdown." The COVID-19 pandemic saw a significant increase in a love for literature, most likely due to more time at home and therefore an opportunity to slow down. During the first lockdown in spring 2020, children and young people's enjoyment of reading increased from 47.8% pre-lockdown to 55.9% post-lockdown, as revealed by the National Literacy Trust. Steve said, "I love to be entertained, to find a bit of escapism, to be enlightened or to be challenged. Great fiction releases the imagination in a way that moving pictures just can't. And I find many TV documentaries annoyingly dumbed down. A good book gives you time to take it all in. It is understandable that today many find it difficult to make time for reading on top of work, school, family and general daily life." Steve said, "I guess it's like riding a bicycle. When you're not going to forget how, reading regularly is a great way to exercise your mental health and well-being." Whilst the figures suggest that UK book sales are reduced, Steve is not so certain. He said the perfect physical form of real books hasn't changed much in centuries, and I doubt will be disappearing any time soon. And there's a wonderful photograph of the beautiful window of P&G Wells with presumably Steve standing outside.
Ghost of the Mountains settle in. Visitors to Marwell Zoo will now be able to say hello to Warjan, a beautiful male snow leopard. Warjan, who will be 2 in May, travelled from the Czech Republic on March the 25th and arrived at his new home the following day. He joins Irina, the zoo's female snow leopard. Carnivore team leader Carrie Arnold said, "He's doing incredibly well since arriving and we've seen lots of positive behaviour as he starts to explore his new home. Irina is quite curious about him and we're hopeful they're going to get along well. Orjan is a young animal and we hope one day he will play a vital role in securing the future of the species. Known as the Ghost of the Mountains, the snow leopards live amongst the rugged landscapes of 12 countries in the Central and South Asia and their conservation has never been more critical. It's thought there are about 8,000 snow leopards left in the wild, and there is the most beautiful picture of this wonderful animal. He's lying with his head on his outstretched paw and he has the most gorgeous face. He really is, and I must admit, snow leopards are my very favourite."
A new director role for the Cathedral's sub-organist. Winchester Cathedral's sub-organist has been appointed the first female director of music at a cathedral in Suffolk. Claudia Grinnell will take up the position at St. Edmundsbury Cathedral in Bury St. Edmunds in time for the new choir term in September. Ms. Grinnell has been on the music staff at Winchester Cathedral since 2017, taking responsibility for the girl choristers. She also teaches the organ at Winchester College. Before moving to Winchester, she was an organ scholar at Salisbury Cathedral and Peterhouse, Cambridge. Miss Grinnell said, "I am delighted to be taking up the role of Director of Music at St. Edmundsbury Cathedral later this year. And having received such a warm welcome during the interview process, I'm really looking forward to getting to know the cathedral team, the wider community, and continuing Timothy Parsons' fantastic work. Though I'll be sad to say goodbye after a wonderful 7 years in Winchester, I am excited for the move to Suffolk in the summer and all that this new role will bring." Andrew Lumsden, Director of Music at Winchester Cathedral, said, "Claudia has been such a wonderful colleague to work with, bringing great musicianship and humour to her role. Her devoted work, particularly with her girl choristers, has been tremendous, with commissioning of new music and championing the music of female composers. We will miss her hugely, but she takes our warmest best wishes and thanks with her as she embarks on the next stage of her professional journey in the beautiful county of Suffolk." Andy Trenier, who's the canon precentor and sacrist of Winchester Cathedral, said, We're very excited for Claudia and St. Edmundsbury as they embark on this new musical chapter. Claudia has made an impressive and lasting impact on the Music Foundation here in Winchester, not least in leading and significantly developing our work with girl choristers in recent years. Claudia is not just a great musician and choir director, she is a great self-starter, team player, and organizer who has a vision for a modern, inclusive choral tradition. We wish her the very best in this next phase of what looks set to be a stellar musical career. Miss Grinnell succeeds Timothy Parsons, who has served as Director of Music at St. Edmundsbury Cathedral since 2021, following his appointment as Director of Music at Wells Cathedral, where he moves this summer. And a previous link between Winchester and Bury St. Edmunds is that a former Dean of Winchester, the late James Atwell, previously served there. And there's a couple of photographs of Claudia Grinnell here, and the main picture is of her at the organ, which is, in my mind, is always an incredibly complex instrument to play, but it's absolutely beautiful hearing the sound of an organ being played, particularly in somewhere like Winchester Cathedral. Mm. So I think our good wishes for her in a new phase in her career.
Indeed.
£610,000 refugee home conversion given go-ahead. Winchester City Council unanimously approved plans to convert a vacant property into a six-bedroom shared home for refugees. The empty property at 59 Colebrook Street, neighbouring the council offices, will have six private rooms, four washrooms, a shared space and additional bike storage. The Planning Committee approved the plans to transform the building, which has been vacant since the summer of 2021, into a temporary accommodation for Ukrainian and Afghan refugees at a meeting on Wednesday, March the 13th. The City of Winchester Trust had previously objected to the application due to a lack of communal areas. However, Council Officer Cameron Tyler explained the plans exceed the shared space requirements for a house in multiple occupation, HMO. The City Council agreed £610,000 for the work in November. Councillor Chris Westwood, Cabinet Member for Housing, said, "Homelessness is growing in this county, and in Winchester we need more temporary accommodation to meet the demand. This plan will reduce the need for emergency accommodation and provide a better housing option for our guests who would otherwise be threatened by homelessness. This is a sound investment for Winchester City Council." Applicant Mitchell Cowan, a corporate building surveyor at the City Council, highlighted the benefits of a central location with strong transport links and Winchester's resettlement team being based next door. The external appearance of the property will not change and bins will be kept at the back, not on the street. Residents will also have access to a private courtyard. Concerns were raised over the increased use of water, but as the property has previously been used as an HMO for a similar number of people, the issue was dismissed. The application was approved unanimously by the committee. And there's a photograph of it. It's actually a very pretty house. I don't know if it's Georgian or not, but beautiful big paned windows and a very elegant front door with a nice pediment over the top and sort of columns down the side. It will really benefit from being done up too.
TV star Rick finally picks up his Emmy. A TV star from Winchester was in disbelief to hear he had finally won his first Emmy after multiple nominations. Rick Adams, 52, from Kingsworthy, won the American TV Award for an episode of his show Virtually Rick, which explored how fungus can reverse climate change. Mr. Adams, who launched a radio station at Peter Simmons College more than 30 years ago, has presented shows such as The Big Breakfast on Channel 4, Crazy Cottage on ITV, The National Lottery for the BBC, Amazing Animals on National Geographic, and co-hosted Kids' Choice Awards alongside Whitney Houston. After a successful career in the USA, including his time producing Virtually Rick on Spectrum News 1, the broadcaster returned home to Winchester in 2022. His friend, Amrit Singh, from Spectrum News One, therefore accepted the Emmy on his behalf, with Rick sending a last-minute video for Amrit to play as his acceptance speech live on stage. The Emmy winner said, "I didn't expect it. I wake up at 3:30 a.m. I wasn't sure if I would win or not. Amrit said there was no Wi-Fi in this place. I recorded something in 30 seconds flat on my phone." He was still downloading it as he walked up to the podium. He's a legend. He played it out live so everyone could hear it, and they were all laughing in the right places. Last year, I went and I didn't win, so it was a bittersweet to not be there, but it was great to know that my friend was there in my place. My goal is to make boring things interesting, because that's the best way of teaching. You always remember the best teachers because they were fun. I always remember my English teacher at Westgate, and he ended up producing some of the biggest West End musicals with Michael Ball. In Virtually Rick, the TV and radio personality characterizes a mad professor to break down difficult concepts for kids using virtual and augmented storytelling. After winning the Emmy in the summer, Rick finally received the physical award in January. Since being back in Winchester, Rick has been able to spend more time with his family and meet up with old school friends from Westgate and Peter Simmons. He's also working on a new kids' book and even featured in an episode of Casualty, which should be released this month. For more on Rick, you can go to rickadamsonline.com, and there's a picture of Rick holding up his trophy and looking very pleased.
Right, well, I can bring good news to all of the pizza fans out there. The city's Papa John's outlet will not face the axe. Winchester's Papa John's is not one of the 43 of the pizza chain's restaurants across the UK to close in the next 2 months. The takeaway business confirming plans to axe the underperforming branches after launching a review at the start of 2024. It will close the restaurants by mid-May following a consultation process, Papa John's International said. The company has not confirmed how many staff will be impacted by closures. The group had previously said it planned strategic closures to free up money for investment and improve profitability at its remaining UK sites. It has now identified 43 restaurants as underperforming locations that are no longer financially viable. However, the Papa John's store in Winchester will remain open, with the closures affecting various locations around London, Kent, and further to the north of England. In 2023, the store, based on St George's Street, applied to stay open for collection and delivery until 3 a.m. However, Winchester City Council's licensing subcommittee said that it would allow them to stay open till 1 a.m. for collection and 3 a.m. for delivery, extending its from previous opening hours of 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. Managing Director of Papa John's UK, which is Chris Pailakdru, said, "Our priority is our team members, who will be fully supported throughout this process, and our goal is to work with impacted team members and attempt to find redeployment opportunities where they are available."
Psychological drama staged. A lot of our readers, and I think the odd presenter, very involved in this. Chesil Theatre. A psychological drama will be at the Chesil Theatre next week. The Haunting of Hill House, based on the book by Shirley Jackson, will be performed by the company from Saturday, April 6th to Saturday, April 17th. Set in the summer of 1960, the play follows a small group of strangers investigating Hill House with the intent of discovering its secrets. But events spiral from mere curiosity into a litany of nightmares. Director of the production, Jim Glaister, said, "Shirley Jackson's tale of an ill-fated scientific study has fascinated people for decades. The book gets under the skin and burns itself into the memory, being so rich in mystery and ambiguity. They won't be using me. It has been my intent to try and do Jackson's themes and characters justice, and I hope those familiar with the novel will feel that this production has succeeded in that aim. The Haunting of Hill House runs at the Chesil Theatre, Winchester, from April 6th to April the 13th, at the preview performance on April the 5th. Tickets are available from the Chesil Theatre website, which is all one word, chesiltheatre.org.uk.
Man is arrested in connection with dead wildlife. A man has been arrested in connection with an incident in which a number of dead animals were left outside a shop in Broughton. Police were called on the morning of Friday, March the 15th, after the dead bodies of around 50 hares, a kestrel and a barn owl were found outside the Broughton Community Shop in High Street. An investigation was launched, and officers from Hampshire and the Isle of Wight Country Watch team have been following various lines of inquiry. The police spokeswoman said, "Part of our inquiries have included examinations of the barn owl and the kestrel. Those examinations revealed that both birds had been shot with a firearm. Both the kestrel and the barn owl are listed under the Schedule 1 of the Wildlife Countryside Act 1981, giving them legal protection. On Thursday, March the 28th, investigating officers arrested a 37-year-old man from Totten on suspicion of criminal damage, night poaching, an offence under the Public Order Act of killing a Scheduled 1 protected bird, an offence under the Animal Welfare Act, killing of brown hare in the closed season, and the offence under the Firearms Act. He remained in police custody while officers carried out inquiries. Country Watch Sergeant Stuart Ross said, "Since this incident took place, we have been actively pursuing numbers of lines of inquiry and are working with partner agencies to establish the circumstances of what happened. We are grateful for the help we have received from the local community, and we'd like to thank them for their patience while we investigate what happened. There may be some people who have information who have not come forward to us, and if so, we would urge them to do so as soon as possible. Anyone who has information can report it by calling 101 and quoting the reference number 44240111410 or via Hampshire Constabulary website. Information can also be passed anonymously to the charity Crime Stoppers on 0800 555 111 or via its website at crimestoppers.co.uk. And there is a very, very distressing picture, of about 50 dead animals just spaced around outside this shop. Absolutely appalling.
Slightly changing the theme here. This is about the refurbishment plans on hold until an operator can be found. And this is about an old pub in Winchester, which I have a soft spot for, but it's a rather sad soft spot. The Winchester City Pub, or a Winchester City Pub, is still waiting for a new operator to take it on so major refurbishment works can start. Star Pubs and Bars has been promoting the First In, Last Out in Wales Street since May last year. The Heineken business announced that it's planning a £240,000 refurbishment of the historic pub, which was closed due to structural issues in 2019. The Freehouse has since been up for lease, advertised with an ingoing cost of £38,291 and an annual rent of £27,165. The planning application was recently submitted for a range of new signs, floodlights and lanterns. A spokesman for Star Pubs and Bars said, "We remain keen to undertake a major refurbishment of the First In, Last Out on Wales Street, subject to recruiting an operator to lease the pub. The project would completely revamp the First In Last Out, transforming it into a top-quality pub with a smart new decor and a stunning newly landscaped riverside garden, complete with covers for year-round use. A new kitchen would also be installed to enable food to feature. The pub would have a bar area for drinks and socialising, a snug fitted out with darts, as well as space for dining. The First In Last Out is a beautiful old listed pub. It's in a great location, surrounded by housing and within walking distance of the centre of Winchester, on a main route into the city. The pub also benefits from private accommodation for the operator. Whilst we have people interested in leasing the First In Last Out, this is at a very early stage. Anyone interested in finding out more about leasing the pub can see all the details at starpubs.co.uk or call 08085 949596. Now, the listed building had urgent structural works back in 2021 when the entire gable end wall not properly attached to the rest of the building. And in 2013, its bedrooms were labelled the worst B&B rooms in the country and featured on the TV programme The Hotel Inspector when it tried to improve them. The First In Last Out has been dispensing beer since at least 1896, originally as a beer house that was licensed to sell beer, but not spirits. The pub has been a free house since 1976, having previously been a Charrington's house. For more details about the planning application, search 24/00316/AVC on Winchester City Council's online planning portal. And there are a couple of pictures of the pub. One is as it is at the moment, and another one is an artist's impression of what it could look like. So for any of you who have gone up and down Wales Street, you'll see this rather sad-looking building,
yeah,
which desperately needs some work doing on it.
History Trust patron Dan explores Stonehenge for TV. Historian Dan Snow returned to Channel 5 to present a new documentary about Stonehenge. Stonehenge, the Discovery with Dan Snow, premiered at 9 p.m. on Sunday, March 31st on Channel 5 and My 5. The programme follows Dan, who is also a patron of Hampshire History Trust, which runs Winchester's Heritage Open Days, as he attempts to piece together the history of the Stone Circle and reveal modern discoveries that are moving the world closer to uncovering its mysteries. Along his journey, he visited the Wiltshire Museum in Devizes to examine the Bush Barrow chieftain and his gold lozenge, found in 1808, and went among the stones with skyscape archaeologist Fabio Paraccio Silva of Bournemouth University to measure astronomical alignments. In the opening of the programme, which was released ahead of the premiere, Dan explained his and others' fascination with Stonehenge. Dan said, "There's nothing like this ring of colossal stones, arches, anywhere else in the world. It is as old as the pyramids. It is one of the world's greatest archaeological sites." And there's a picture of him, looking like him, yes, obviously, in front of the massive stone arches.
Spring is in the air as blooms burst into life. Garden teams at National Trust sites in Hampshire have been adapting their daffodil planting to account for the changing weather patterns. The mild winter and wet spring have provided conditions for daffodils to thrive this spring, in contrast to last year when the country experienced the driest February in 30 years, with cold snaps into March. Daffodils have been popping up as early as January, highlighting the impacts of the changing climate. Paul Gallivan, South East Gardens and Parks consultant for the National Trust, said, "This year we have enjoyed some extremely early displays. For instance, bright yellow narcissus, February gold, was out in January, about 2 weeks earlier than usual. However, careful planning by our teams last autumn means that we're seeing a mix of varieties on show over a longer period than, say, 5 years ago. He said daffodils have been covering lawns and filling borders at the National Trust Gardens, Mottisfont, Hintonampner and the Vine. Hundreds of daffodils covered the lawns and spread beneath the famous great plane tree at Mottisfont near Romsey. Head gardener Rob Ballard said, "Daffodils usually prefer a moist soil, so the conditions are perfect for them. We've got quite a few varieties here, and they're looking really lovely now, especially late-flowering Narcissus poeticus, more commonly known as pheasant's eye, which is pure white with a yellow and red eye, and white and yellow Narcissus thalia, which is popping up in the borders of the walled rose garden. Mottisfont's magnolia tree by the stable yard has been creating a broad canopy of scented white blossom. In April, brightly coloured tulips pop up in the kitchen garden raised beds and in the rose garden. Beneath the lime avenue, thousands of tiny blue star-shaped chiconodax flowers have been appearing. Mottisfont garden guides lead free themed daily works from the history and seasonal planting. Chris Skinner, the head gardener of Hintonampner near Ulsford, said, "The majority of our daffodils this year are late flowering varieties, but these are definitely appearing earlier this year. We're also seeing rapid growth in our tulips too. We've got more than 10,000 planted for this year's displays. They don't like the damp as much as daffodils, but hopefully we'll get a terrific, albeit early displays in April." The National Trust believes Hintonampner has some of the best native bluebell displays in Hampshire in the beech woods that form part of the 4 mile Dutton Estate Walk. At the Vine near Basingstoke, gardener Emma Greenwood said, "We actually had quite a bit of frost here, and that held our daffodils back more than other gardens. Visitors have been able to take bunches of daffodils home for a donation." Emma said, "We're really keen to give people the chance to buy local, seasonal flowers grown in our ecologically responsible way. 86% of the UK cut flower market is made up from imports. All our cut flowers are grown on site, mostly from seed using our own potting mixes without any chemical inputs. Later in spring, we'll hopefully be able to offer tulips, and in summer, sweet peas and dahlias. When bluebells appear, circular 1.4-mile walk takes visitors past the lake and down to the wetlands bird hide. It's then into the woods to see the carpet of delicately scented bluebells." And there is a lovely picture of, and it's from Mottisfont. In the front are the daffodils, and there's the weir behind it, and then there's a beautiful old, I presume it's an oak tree, with coloured grasses and shrubs behind it. And there's another one, again of Mottisfont, of the daffodils underneath the trees. And there's a third picture of the Easter Adventures, of two little children, one with a lovely pink rabbit, and they're obviously doing the trail to find out all the information they need, and they've got headbands with rabbit ears on them.
Top chefs set to appear at the Watercress Festival. A lineup of award-winning chefs will be appearing at the upcoming Arlesford Watercress Festival. The group will be headed up by 2023 MasterChef, the Professionals winner, Tom Hablett. From April, Tom will take up a residency at Laneston House, with the festival giving him a chance to know the local area better. He said, "I'm really looking forward to the festival. I've heard a lot about it. I think I'm still in the process of discovering my food style, as I'm still fairly new to the industry. And I've been massively inspired by the award-winning kitchens I've worked in and during competitions, such as the RIBI, the Great Britain and Ireland Rotary Club Young Chef Competition, and Springboard Future Chef. These competitions push me and my cooking. I love the classics, and I also love experimenting with different flavours and trying new things. But it has to be executed perfectly. Tom will present the Barber's Best award to the trader with the most unique use of watercress, along with demonstrating to attendees what he will make using the produce. Sharing the Cookery Theatre stage with Tom will be Suki Pantel, founder of Suki's Curries and Spices, and she previously appeared on the Great Cookbook Challenge with Jamie Oliver on Channel 4 in 2022. Her debut cookbook, Garnish with Garam Masala, will be released in May, with signed copies available at the Watercress Festival. Martin Dawkins, will also known as the Rustic Chef, will also be in attendance. Having worked under Marcus Waring and Alex Aitken, he has more than two decades in the kitchen and has earned three rosettes and even a nod from the Michelin Guide. Martin said, "It's not just about delicious dishes. It's about doing right by the environment and our community. Our philosophy is simple. Let the flavors shine. Fresh and vibrant ingredients can speak for themselves." Long-running Watercress Festival chefs Andy McKenzie and Phil Yeomans from Leinston House complete the lineup and will bring their double act back to the cookery stage. Taking place on Sunday, May 19th, the event will feature dozens of popular returning attractions, and this year marks the festival's 20th anniversary, and there'll be a chance for three local producers to talk about and sample their wares to a live audience at the Cookery Theatre.
An emotional roller coaster. The 13th edition of Winchester Film Festival returned this February and March with part two of its mix of contemporary award-winning films from around the world. A particular highlight of part two was the screening of films by free-spirited Iranian filmmakers censored in their own countries. Such is the festival's reputation for supporting censored filmmakers that the Iranian director Nazanin Ganbari flew in from Los Angeles for the festival's UK premiere of her film Mirage, an experience Nazanin described as a pivotal moment in her film career. Iranian director Amir Hossein Hatami, who attended a Q&A at the UK premiere of his film Somewhere to Stay, described the festival as undoubtedly one of the highlights of my life. Edward Fennell, a former correspondent to The Times and coordinator of Captain Swing Riot's Bicentenary, described the event as moving and harrowing, offering an insight into life in Iran which goes far beyond the usual news reports. The festival's reputation for screening unconventional, brave and sometimes challenging films was enhanced this year with the experimental art house feature film The Lies We Tell Ourselves, with flamboyant rebel director Sarah Lamberg flying in from Australia for the film's UK premiere. On the slate this year was also a collection of the best British short films, with a host of visiting directors, producers, actors, composers and scriptwriters attending Q&As at a packed-out West Downs auditorium. For festival director John Hayes, the most satisfying aspect of this year's festival was not just the festival's success at screening films that broadened horizons and reflected the burning issues of our time, but the role of the audience. He said, "The highlight for me was the open-minded, vibrant and generous nature of an audience that comprised of people from all ages, walks or life and cultural backgrounds, all with a common aim, to see the world through other people's eyes while sharing an emotional roller coaster ride. The success of any festival is not solely determined by what it has to offer, but by the willingness of the audience to embrace the offering with an open mind." While Winchester is often portrayed as a conservative historic capital, it is full of vibrant, open-minded individuals, both young and old, binary, non-binary, and everything in between. And there's a lot of photographs which I probably won't go into describing in detail, but there's John Hayes, the director, and the Iranian filmmaker Nazanin Ganbari wearing a wonderful, I presume, Iranian-themed outfit of a sort of embroidered waistcoat and a green, almost like a pillbox hat, which must be Iranian, and Amir Hossein Hatami, and a rather interesting effect they've got of someone, a girl like wearing a red dress, but it's become the red carpet that people would walk up to for the Oscars. And John Hayes is lying on it with her behind, pointing a hand at the Winchester Film Festival sign. And below are the Sara Lamberg and festival team members Zaina Hussein, Erin Summers and Giorgi Nicolini, all also lying on this sort of red carpet which is now floating down some stairs, and various other people who attended.
Coffee and sustainability. Just off Winchester High Street lies Project Cafe, a step in the right direction for coffee brewing and a sustainable future. In a world where living sustainably is the forefront of people's minds, more are looking for a way to live more low-impact lifestyle and are wondering what steps they can take. Projects has gained raving five-star reviews for excellent coffee brewed using the brand Girls Who Grind, an independent female-founded speciality coffee roastery. The menu at Projects sets it apart from other coffee shops on the high street, which do not offer the same variety of options and flavours to those who are either vegetarian or vegan or gluten-free. Cassie White, director of Projects Kitchen and Store, was asked to pick a favourite from the menu. It's hard to pick a favourite as the menu changes seasonally, so I have a few favourites. But I have to say, right now, it's the za'atar fried olive bread. At Projects, the phrase reduce, reuse, recycle is not just not a slogan. It's a way of life. Cassie White has urged people, if you're going to buy anything, buy it from Project Zero. Project Zero is something unique to Projects, where customers can purchase refillable containers and refill their own, pushing people away from the single-use plastic containers. But there is more to Projects as well. It sells second-hand vintage clothing and handmade items that support more than 30 local small businesses. Projects was intertwined sustainability with the art of brewing, providing a delightful coffee experience with a warm and homely atmosphere. It's a great example of how coffee shop can be environmentally friendly without compromising on quality or taste. So if you're in the area, why not give it a try? And this article was written by Sophie Parr from Peter Simmons College as part of the NewsQuest Young Reporters Scheme. And there's a picture of Projects P. And I'm not quite sure where off the high street it is, but it looks as though it might be by the walkway. Is it, do you think? It's hard to say. But it's somewhere in Winchester, just off the high street. Looks fascinating.
A former mayoress celebrates a century. A former mayoress of Winchester has celebrated her 100th birthday by watching her favourite jazz band in a Southampton pub. Joyce Upperton was joined by her son Kerry and three grandchildren, Louise, Helen and Jenny, who travelled 3,500 miles from Toronto, Canada, to be with her to mark the special occasion at the Dolphin in St. Denis. Joyce was born in Malta in 1924, where her father was stationed with the Royal Navy. She later moved to Gosport, where she still lives to this day, and she spent her childhood at Gosport High School, and there she discovered her love of jazz music. On every Monday for the last 20 years, Joyce has frequented the Dolphin, listening to the Harry Young Band's Sound of Traditional Jazz, which was therefore a fitting backdrop to her birthday celebrations. She told the Daily Echo, which is the Chronicle's sister paper, "I've been coming here every week for the last 20 years, and it's brilliant. We're so well looked after by everybody, and everyone has a great time." In working life, Joyce was a councillor for Gosport Borough Council, and later became mayoress of Gosport and then Winchester in the 1990s. In Winchester, she was invited to be mayoress by the late Councillor John Nunn, who was a widower. One of the highlights of the mayoralty in 1994-95 was greeting Princess Diana at a military parade at Winchester Guildhall. In that time, Joyce met the late Queen Elizabeth II, as well as the Duke of Edinburgh. She also had the pleasure of meeting Princess Diana on several occasions, and when she'd visited Winchester, and Joyce fondly recalled her as a lovely person to be around. Asked whether she had any advice on how to get the most out of life, Joyce told the Daily Echo, "Be happy. I'm a happy person, and I have a very positive outlook on life. I've always been cheerful when things are difficult. If the sun shines during the day, it's a bonus. I think you have to be grateful for what you have and make the most out of life." Harry Young, himself 87, band leader of the namesake band that performed at Joyce's birthday celebrations, remarked, "We've been going for 20 years now, and Joyce has always been there. She's a lovely person, and we hope that she enjoyed her birthday. It was great to see so many friends and family in attendance." And this article is accompanied by a picture of Joyce with Harry Young at the Dolphin. And they've got a pint. Well, she hasn't. She's got a glass of wine, but he's got a pint of bitter there. And he's also got a picture taken from the Chronicle in 1994 when Joyce Upperton, as mayoress of Winchester, welcomed Princess Diana to Winchester Guildhall. So congratulations on the 100.
Thank you, and that concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors for selecting the extracts and to the copying and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Goodbye.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. And when you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.